Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. This is Ben, no co-host because I'm jumping into a guest actually this week, not in the TDN family, but a good friend of all of us on staff. Brandon Thorne works for The Athletic. Denver is an offensive line expert, and given the character of our offensive line week last week, I wanted to bring him on to shed more light on what's working well at the NFL level, how college players are translating, and what to look for when you scout. Make sure you stick to the end where we give out some word associations on teaching tape. So if you're looking for the best offensive lineman for certain traits, Brandon gives his guys. Let's hop into the interview with Brandon Thorne. And there he is, the man of the hour. It is Brandon Thorne. Brandon Thorne, of course, of The Athletic Denver, covering Broncos, and also of the Scout Academy as their football content manager. Brandon is also one of the chief architects behind Offensive Line Masterminds, which I just realized like 2 minutes ago, is coming up. It's in a few weeks here now. So, Brandon, say hello to the people of Locked On NFL Draft. But also, are you psyched? This is the second year of Offensive Line Masterminds, isn't that right?
Yeah, man, I'm really excited about it. This year should be even bigger than last year in pretty much every way. And my primary role there is to provide all the film that we're going to be studying, all the players and everything like that. So it's definitely just a great opportunity, and it's something that it's probably my favorite thing that I get to do related to football. So yeah, I'm just busy doing that, breaking down defensive line play, and can't wait to get up there to Dallas and be a part of that group again.
Is that a low key stressful experience, picking out all this film that these NFL players are going to be, you know, looking at as far as like teaching tape goes? Are you ever worried that you're going to find a rep where a guy lost, like an offensive tackle lost, and then he's going to be at O-line Masterminds?
It's crossed my mind, but I don't really worry about it, honestly, because I did it last year and that was the case several times. And I think everyone there realizes it, and we're all there not to get on each other or anything, or, you know, the peer, players as peers, they're there to just really, you know, take constructive criticism, and really they're vulnerable at that time. And it's like, it's just really cool, man, the atmosphere, because nobody, I mean, they'll laugh about it if anything. So yeah, especially going last year, I don't really feel any pressure about it, because I know it's going to happen, you know. And I do also include not just teach tape of guys winning as far as defensive line. I also record offensive linemen winning against these defensive linemen, so I kind of have
right.
I could put the good and the bad in there, so yeah, hopefully it'll even out.
Yeah, well okay, last offensive line masterminds question, because I'm very jealous of this summit. It seems super sick. Coolest thing you learned last year? What was the coolest, like, I don't know if it was a moment or it was a debate between guys, it was a film note, what was that one thing where you were like, I would have never even thought about this as an item of a focus, as a note, until it was said?
Man, I mean, some of the coolest stuff that happened was just being a part of, I remember after the film session in the morning, we broke before we went to the field and had a really, I was kind of a part of like a 3-4 man conversation with Teron Armstead, Mitchell Schwartz, and Duke, and just to get to hear their philosophy and the way that they're thinking about different alignments and stuff like that. It just to kind of be in that little, you know, piece of a conversation was really cool. And that happened several times with different guys. But one of the specific things that was talked about, not in that scenario, but inside the classroom, was Mitchell Schwartz, who's just probably one of the most articulate guys I've ever met with football. The way he can explain it and break down complex things is really incredible. But he was talking about Joe Thomas and just about some of the things that he could do with his hand placement, and how he used to just like talk to Mitch and the other guys in the offensive line room and just make it sound so simple what he was doing, even though it was like the most difficult thing ever, as far as like he would actually think in his mind of trying to place his hand on a certain part of a guy's bicep, and he would actually be able to land it there, like, you know, 9 times out of 10. And like the guys in the room were just floored, and, you know, Thomas would make it just sound so simple. And to hear Mitch talk about that and laugh about it, and then everyone in there to kind of get a peek into just what made Joe Thomas so special was really cool, man. That was something that really stood out, were the Joe Thomas stories.
Yeah, and when you hear Thomas just as an analyst now on NFL Network, there are players, ex-player analysts who struggle, and there are ex-player analysts who shine, and Thomas is so good, man. He's fun to listen to, so that doesn't surprise me. But obviously, Offensive Line Masterminds. Yeah, if you follow Brandon on Twitter at BrandonThornNFL, if you follow any of the offensive line guys, or really most of the NFL guys, I'm sure there'll be a ton of clips coming out. There'll be a ton of love for it. It's a really cool summit. But as Brandon said, he's pulling the film for it. He's getting the teach tape out. And so Brandon has gone through a ton of just trench play film from an offensive perspective and a defensive perspective over the last few weeks. It's all across his timeline. So I wanted to bring him in and chat offensive line first. That's where we'll focus. We just did that week for the summer scouting here on Locked On NFL Draft. And I want to know, Brandon, it's an underappreciated position in general. It's a position not a lot of people watch for or focus on. When you think of the general schema for, all right, these are the good offensive tackles, these are the good guards, whatever, who's a player who, after your film review of 2018, stands out as just underappreciated? People don't realize how well this guy is playing. He's going to be a name we're all aware of in 2 years when people catch on. But right now, you know, this is the guy who's going to kind of stand out player.
Yeah, I think there's a few guys that come to mind who are just really underappreciated. I'll start with one who I think guys like me and you guys who are analyzing the game know about, but Ali Marpet, to me, I did my all pro team last year, and I had him as the first left guard over Quentin Nelson because I thought from week one to week 17, of course, minus the bye week, I thought that he was the most consistent left guard in the NFL because I thought early on there, Nelson had a little bit of struggles, nothing, you know, major, but a couple reps that really shown up against Geno Atkins early in the year, then Jadeveon Clowney, and just a couple things like that. And I think Nelson at the end was more dominant than Marpet, but in terms of sheer consistency, I thought Marpet was the best left guard in football last year and definitely had that case. So I think, you know, just overall speaking, I think he's a top two, three left guard in the game. And I don't think he's really thought of like that. He didn't even really get all pro consideration or anything like that. And I think it's because he plays where he does and for a team that wasn't very good. But then that often happens with offensive line. They get kind of overlooked because of that. But that's somebody who really stands out. Another left guard is Joe Tooney, who I thought was underrated for several years now. But I think last year, especially if you go back and watch the Super Bowl against Aaron Donald, some of the things that he was able to do there, just really get his hands on Donald and sustain blocks in pass protection multiple times, that just doesn't really get to happen against Aaron Donald. So his performance, he's gotten more consistent, I think, over the last couple of years. He's always been a technician, but he's gotten kind of overwhelmed at the point of attack at times. But that just doesn't happen very often for him anymore. And I think he's a top five or six left guard in the game right now. So he really jumps out. And there's a couple of tackles that stand out to me. I still think Joe Staley is a top five or six left tackle in the game. I don't know if he gets really that amount of love. I thought Ronnie Stanley really took it off last year. I think he's been pretty solid since he came into the league in that tackle class, you know, with guys like Taylor Decker and Laremy Tunsil. To me, last year, Stanley was excellent. You watch him against Myles Garrett last year, which I did today. He had a very good game against Miles. You know, Garrett was able to kind of push him back a little bit with his power, but overall, I thought he had a really good game against Miles Garrett. And just in general, I think he's one of the ascending left tackles in the game today. So, those guys really stand out. And just to give a center, I think Corey Linsley is really underrated for the Packers.
The Green Bay kid, right? Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, just he's a really good zone run blocker. He wins with quickness and just efficiency. Takes really good angles, things like that. He's not, you know, like a Travis Frederick or Alex Mack in terms of, you know, strength and stuff like that. But he's definitely a zone kind of space guy who's really heady and smart on the field. So yeah, those are the names I think that I can give everybody, you know, at each kind of position that to me are, you know, don't get talked about enough.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Linsley there, because when I was doing prep for Green Bay's draft this past year, I was saying, listen, interior offensive line is a need, but I'm watching these guys, I'm watching, you know, the team play, and I'm saying, I'd be so comfortable leaving Linsley as a starter. The issue is health. But like when you talk about interior offensive line as a need for the Packers, it's to me, it's guard, it's not center. And I'll be interested to see they draft Elgton Jenkins, of course, at 44. And so, you know, I'm curious to see what they do in that situation. And obviously, backing up a guy who's struggled to stay healthy over the past couple of years is always a good move. But you brought up a guy in Joe Tooney who, at NC State, played a bunch of different positions, but kind of finished off his career as a tackle. He ends up moving to guard and is very successful for the Patriots at guard. Now, the Patriots are a bit of a different case study when it comes to the rest of the league because they love to cross-train their guys. But one of the things that we are seeing a lot of is college tackles who, when they're coming out, people say, listen, he's going to have to move to guard for reason X, reason Y. It's either he's not long enough, he doesn't have enough size, you got to protect him at guard, or he's too big, he's too clunky, he doesn't have the movement skills, you got to move him inside the guard. And so you're now multiple years worth of perspective following guys from their college offensive line tape to the NFL. What do you think of this movement of, listen, we got to take these tackles and move them to guard? Why do you think that's such an instinct for NFL offensive coaches and for offensive line coaches? And finally, are these players moving successfully? Do you think that there really is a higher rate of sticking at the NFL for these players because they're moving to guard? Or are we really just seeing the good players staying good and the bad players staying bad?
I think it's a little bit of both, but I do think that we have several years now where there's plenty of tackle to guard converts that have been successful. And it's dating back to guys like Zach Martin and Marshall Yanda. I mean, those are the two best right guards in football. And it's been the case, in my opinion, for the last 4 or 5 years. Those have been the gold standard too. And they were both tackles in college. And then more recently, I mean, Joe Tooney, Mitch Morse, Cody Whitehair, Joe Bentonio, Brandon Scherff, Ali Marpet. I mean, there, you know, you could go on. So I think that there's plenty of examples of guys who played a tackle position in college, moved in inside, whether to guard or center, and had success. And I think the common denominator is these guys are typically, they don't have the physical prototypical skill or measurements, you know, length, size, weight, whatever it may be, but they're usually really technically refined players who win at a high level. And I think that's what the NFL sees. If they see a left tackle who has good technique, but he doesn't quite have those measurements, 9 times out of 10, they're going to move him inside. I'm surprised like somebody like David Bakhtiari didn't get moved inside, but thank God he didn't, because obviously.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I do think that Zach Martin can play left tackle right now. Like, there's no doubt in my mind
he's going to
be a very good left tackle, and probably some of these other guys as well. So I think more and more, I think we're seeing that offensive linemen have to be good technicians and fundamentally sound to succeed in today's game, and that's for a lot of different reasons. But I think if a guy wins with a high level of technique and he's really fundamentally sound in college, that more than anything else is probably going to allow him to be a good player in the pros.
Right. So you brought up offensive line technique, and this, I'm really interested to hear your answer in this because I have some theories, but I don't spend as much time on the offensive line as you do. So you have now a massive influx, a flow of just general offensive scheme from the college ranks into the NFL ranks. It's been well detailed. It's been well covered. When it comes to then offensive line play, is that flow following the same path? Is it along kind of the same current there where you're seeing a little bit of college innovation on the offensive line, you know, techniques, alignments, splits, kick slides used at the college level with these very spread heavy teams that get the ball out quick? I think about a team like a Washington State with a guy like Andre Dillard, who sat in a lot of vertical sets across the course of his career there. And obviously they sprinkled in some new stuff, but that was predominantly how he approached the game. Is that sort of technique, are those sort of philosophies also then flowing into the NFL following the overarching scheme? Or are you seeing different, you know, an interchange? Maybe there's more complex, there's more back and forth kind of. Where's the innovation for offensive line happening, and how is it getting to the NFL?
Yeah, so I think when you look at the most successful guys that are transitioning from college to pro as far as offensive line, I think a lot of the time they're coming from a certain brand of football. There's guys like Andre Dillard who, you know, are kind of the exceptions, but for the most part, you look at SEC powerhouse schools or some of those Big Ten schools like Iowa, Wisconsin, there's certain schools and programs that have a certain level of teaching that's going on, and there's a certain environment for offensive linemen that's in place for these guys to succeed. And I think NFL teams really gravitate towards players from those type of programs because they know what sort of teaching they're getting, and it's very high quality, and it's rooted in the basics and the fundamentals and technique. And I think that that's becoming increasingly important because, as we see, more and more with the current CBA that's in place. I think the last 4 or 5 years have really shown that if, you know, you don't really want ideally to take a chance on an offensive lineman who is an athlete first. That's one of the things that if I hear a guy is mentioned as being a really good athlete and that's the first thing I hear about him, I'm usually scared of him because it's like, Okay, you know, you're telling me that the best thing, the first thing you think of with this offensive lineman is how athletic he is. Okay, like that's not like the most attractive thing I want to hear. It's not a bad thing necessarily, but it shouldn't be like the top that you're counting on. I mean, because just rarely are those guys succeeding unless you have just one of these rare guys like, you know, Trent Williams or Tyron Smith or Teron Armstead. There's not a lot of guys like that. You know, just in general. So I think just overall, you know, as far as players that succeed, I think really, I hate to keep saying the same thing, but hand usage is really important. Being efficient out of your stance, having an efficient stance to begin with, and then being efficient out of it, no false steps. Just being clean with your feet, playing with a strong base so you can use your hands effectively. Having good hand placement, timing with your hands, variance. And, you know, of course, playing a high level competition always helps. And then having a lot of starts always helps as well, just to have that experience. But as far as things that I'm seeing in college that are translating to the pros, I mean, just obviously an emphasis on pass protection is, you know, that's bleeding over for sure. And even a guy like Andre Dillard, while he didn't vertical set early on last year, he didn't really vertical set a lot. I mean, he was setting kind of at a 45 or even just like a flat type of set a lot of the time. So, you know, it wasn't that the Washington State of 2-3 years ago, you know, as far as what Dillard was doing. So I think even colleges like Washington State, for example, and a lot of these spread teams, they're running kind of a lot of these spread offenses have like a power running game associated with them. You think of like an Ohio State. You know, they've had very good run blockers come out of there lately. So, you know, I don't know. I think really the emphasis on pass protection generally in college is bleeding over into the pros. And again, I think certain programs do it just at a higher level than others. And that's usually where we see the best offensive line come from.
No, and that makes a lot of sense. And so, like, I guess my follow-up question, because I hear you talk about you need the hand usage, you need the efficient stance, quick out of your stance, independent hand usage, and I'm just thinking about how much, you know, loved a guy like a Jonah Williams when he was coming out, loved a guy even like Laramie Tunsil a few years ago, I thought a great hand usage when he was coming out. You have these top flight prospects, and then you have all of these really raw athletes and a lot of guys from really small schools, you know, really unknown. Like Brandon Parker's coming out here in the third round, you know what I mean? Like Colton Miller at UCLA, not a small school, but just raw as sushi, right? These guys are getting drafted earlier and earlier, it seems. Titus Howard. Oh man, Titus Howard. So are we kind of getting a dichotomy, like a black and white here where it's like either you have the technique or you don't, and if you don't, we just want the most untouched, the most pure, you know, piece of clay we can find, because that way we can build him up with the technique that we want. Is that just kind of the dichotomy for maybe drafting these offensive tackles?
Yeah, I mean, I think as long as you have football coaches out there, you're going to have that, because I don't think you're going to meet many football coaches that don't watch a player who's raw and think that they could fix them or think that they can make them, you know, a quality player. That's just a kind of, I think that's the way that football coaches are kind of wired, you know, that if they have a lot of confidence in what they can do, they sometimes, you know, inflate that a little bit and think that they can, you know, fix somebody who just has those raw physical tools. But maybe for, you know, running back, receiver, I don't know, defensive line, that can work a little bit, you know, at a little bit higher of a level. But I think offensive line more than any other position is really a technique and skill position first and foremost. And if you can get the size and the athleticism as a supplementary addition to who they are as a player, that's great. But I don't, you know, I just don't see it being very wise to base everything on that. There's always an exception though. And we see those guys succeed at such a high level, like Tyron Smith and, you know, who was coming out of USC, who wasn't necessarily like a technician per se. Teron Armstead came from a very small school, Arkansas Pine Bluff. So those guys are the exception, though. I don't really think that, you know, it's something to really bank on for success, you know, as often as may have happened in the past. I think we're kind of going away from that. But although, you know, 2 years ago we saw Colton Miller go, and I think if he didn't have the combine he had, he probably wouldn't have went as high as he did, because you watch him on film. I mean, you know, I think we all saw him struggle pretty mightily across his last year at UCLA. But, you know, coaches watch him and they see, okay, this is a great raw athlete. Maybe I can fix his, you know, his technique, his false step that he has. And we just didn't see that last year. I mean, some people were saying he had a decent year. I mean, it was, he had some okay times, but I don't know. He's still the same guy. I mean, we'll see. I'm not confident being under Tom Cable if he can, you know, really make that
Right.
jump. But I think a big part of guys succeeding that, you know, do represent that other side, who aren't necessarily very technically sound, but they are that, you know, size speed freak, you know, with 35-inch arms. Those guys, I think, need to be in a position like Andre Dillard went to. And not that Andre Dillard is that guy, but if a Titus Howard would have went to Philly, I would have been like, okay, you know, now I feel a lot better about this guy developing, because he's going to
Right.
be playing for Jeff Stoutland. He's going to be learning from Jason Peters and Lane Johnson, and he's not going to have any pressure to play. There's not a lot of situations like that, obviously. So, but still, I think when you're talking about those type of projects, I think coaching becomes even more important, and then the environment that they're going into. Is there a track record of success of development there? If not, I get really worried. Is there some really good, solid veteran presences in the locker room that play his position that can kind of teach him and bring him along? If those things aren't in place, a la Titus Howard, I mean, I think that, you know, it's fighting an uphill battle, and it's going to be really tough for guys like that to succeed.
Yeah, and the situation is critical. And I love that you bring it up, because we talk about this every year and it gets kind of thrown back in our face by draft fans. But you know, you want to know how I feel about a guy. Well, I can tell you how I feel about him before the draft, but I can really tell you how I feel about him afterward when I figure out where he
Right.
lands, because situation is such a big part of it. And offensive line, you know, like you said, goes into, is there a history of development here? You know, what does the mentorship look like? And then also, you know, how successful has this team been at protecting their tackles, protecting their weak links, protecting their young players? I go back, like, one of the things Stoutland does that impresses me the most is he really does a good job at protecting the weakest offensive lineman that he has. And that changes week to week as guys get injured. You see him do a better job and a better job of working with alignment and working with pre-snap stuff. And as an offensive coaching staff as a whole, the Eagles do such a good job protecting the weak guy. When it was Haulapulivahti Vaitai, who was just okay for the Eagles' 2017 Super Bowl run, I mean, everybody and their mama knew the Eagles were going to slide protection left and put a tight end there left, but they were still able to execute the offense.
That's a
We're
great
staying
point.
offensive line. I had defensive line questions lined up, but honestly, this has been such a good offensive line podcast. I want to wrap it up with a little word association. I didn't tell you I was going to do this because I wanted to get you fresh. I wanted to get you know, unencumbered. And so I just have a few phrases for you, and I want to hear the first offensive lineman who pops to mind. You down to play?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. Okay. Easy one. Most consistent.
Zach Martin.
Finisher.
Kelechi Osemele.
Teach tape on a kick slide.
Joe Staley.
Teach tape on independent hand usage.
Mitchell Schwartz.
Teach tape on leverage.
Marshall Yanda.
Teach tape zone blocking.
Jason Kelce.
Oh, heck yeah. All right, this one you can give me a unit on this one. Teach tape on combo blocks.
Pittsburgh Steelers with Munchak. So go back a couple, you know, the last few years.
Right. Go watch Steelers Munchak. Go watch Denver after this year. Breakout year in 2019, either player or unit.
Unit. I think the Bills are going to be much improved. I don't know how much they're
I like that one.
going to break out, but yeah, I think the Bills are going to be much improved. Broncos as well, I think, are going to be improved. The Munchak thing, I think, is very real.
All right, and last but not least, best offensive line not in New England. That one doesn't count.
Just based on last year.
Based on whatever you want. If I had to ask you, Brandon, who's the best offensive line right now that is not in New England, because I think everybody's answer should be New England. Yeah. Who is it?
I'm having a hard time between the Eagles and the Saints, but those would be my two. I'd probably go...
Our friendship is conditional on this answer.
All right, I'll keep it intact and go Philadelphia.
Ass, my boy. Brandon, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast, giving us some good offensive line insight. It's a great position to scout, and it's an exciting position with great minds, as OL Masterminds shows us. Give a second, plug your socials, plug where you're going to be, what you're going to be working on, and then we'll wrap this podcast up.
Yeah, so you could follow me on Twitter at Brandon Thorne NFL. You could check out my podcast, the Trench Warfare Podcast. And yeah, I'm going to be doing The Athletic this season for the Broncos. So once the season starts, I'll really be ramping up my work there. And until then, just really a lot of clips on the timeline, studying defensive line play across the NFL.
Brandon Thorne, thank you so much for joining us, buddy. I appreciate it. You be well.
All right, man. You too. Thank you.
And please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. Get all of your NFL draft coverage at thedraftnetwork.com. Follow your local Locked On podcast networks. I'm Ben, for Brandon, for Trevor, for Jordan, for Jonah, for everybody who's ever been on this doggone podcast. Keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.